off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for racing and breeding in the Mid-Atlantic. On the web at theracingbiz.com. On the radio, on ESPN Richmond, it's Off to the Races. Here's Nick Hahn.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for spending your Saturday morning with us. Fats Domino and last year's Louisiana Derby winner, Epicenter. We had a lot of fun with Epicenter last year, didn't we? The runner-up in the Kentucky Derby and the runner-up in the Preakness Stakes. Winning the Louisiana Derby last year, a rising and just rising major Kentucky Derby prep race that'll be run today in New Orleans. And who better than to introduce us to the fairgrounds other than Fats Domino. On today's show, we'll speak with Ken McPeak. He has two horses in the Louisiana Derby. We're going to do a little change in format because he also has a role with the feature race of last week, the Private Term Stakes, kind of giving away the winner there, but we'll play that race replay during our segment with him, which comes up in about 15 minutes or so. Frank Vespi is living the dream with Jennifer Kelly, the author of the book Sir Barton. Sir Barton actually stood after his racing career at Audley Farm here in Virginia. He won the Triple Crown before they called it the Triple Crown. And she also does the Backtracks segments on theracingbiz.com. So Frank will talk to author Jennifer Kelly in about a half hour from now. And of course, Derby Bill Watson here in about 45 minutes as well to handicap the Louisiana Derby, the Jeff Ruby Stakes from Turfway Park today, another major Kentucky Derby prep race. There's even one tomorrow. The Sunland Derby is run out in New Mexico tomorrow. Looks like weather is going to hold together for all of those races. A little bit of cloudy conditions at the fairgrounds and at Turfway Park, just in northern Kentucky there across the river from Cincinnati. But not a high chance of rain, so we're excited to see that. They have actually already run a Kentucky Derby prep race today, and we'll update you on the winner of the UAE Derby, which was run in Dubai just mere minutes ago. So we'll update you on who that winner is and maybe even get the race call in before the show is out. But let's go back to some of the news that we mentioned. The Louisiana Derby has a field of 12 headed to the gate. This is led by Instant Coffee, trained by Brad Cox, who will have Luis Saez aboard today, the favorite in the race, the two horse. The Louisiana Derby just kind of part of that sequence that just gets a little bit longer and longer with the LeCompte, the Risen Star, now the Louisiana Derby going a mile and 3/16. This is about as prep as they come for the Kentucky Derby, and past winners in that race have really done very well in the Triple Crown. Also today, it's the Jeff Ruby Stakes run at Turfway Park. This has a field of 12 as well. And the favorite in the race gets the rail for Todd Pletcher. That's Major Dude. But the horse we're really interested in, there are actually two that we're interested in. Number 10 is Two Phils. And Two Phils broke his maiden at Colonial Downs. Let's reminisce a little bit. Jason Beam has the call of Two Phils' maiden break and win at Colonial.
They have 3/16 of a mile left to go. Two Phils digs in. Instinctual on the outside. Those two by the furlong pole. Free Soul wants to join the party down toward the inside. Those three as they come toward the 16th pole. It's Two Phils prevailing right now. Two Phils in front. Free Soul down toward the inside. Instinctual on the outside. Two Phils and Jarrett Loveberry home with 50 yards left to go. Two Phils going to go on to win it by two. Free Soul was second. Instinctual third. And Cravens finished fourth.
Yeah, Two Phils for Larry Ravelli, who was on our show about a month ago. Hard-spun horse and really doing well. A little bit of a troubled trip in the Risen Star, but coming out of the fairgrounds to try the Jeff Ruby Stakes with Jeff Loveberry, who actually rode him to that score at Colonial Downs back on July 18th. Of last summer. That was 6 furlongs then. Now he's going up nearly twice as far. So Two Phils has shown progress and he's won it on the slop at Churchill Downs and has been in the money twice at the fairgrounds. Tough place to race, so looking for a better spot there. Congruent, who won the Laurel Futurity back on October 1st, is also in that field at 5-1. So Sonny Leon, who of course rode Rich Strike in the to a win in the Kentucky Derby last year, gets the assignment on Congruent for Antonio Sano. Very interested in those races coming up. We have a fill-in today. Daryl Wood is actually doing the dog jog for the SPCA, the 5K. I don't know if the dog's pulling him or if he's pulling the dog, but we'll have a apt substitute getting in off the AE list. D. Lineweaver is the racing secretary at Shenandoah Downs and has become a facet of the show, the bumper music. Everyone gets their own bumper music who appears on off to the races. Let's see who Dee is one of her favorite songs. Yeah, that's actually Carbon Leaf, but couldn't get that one yanked in time. But yeah, Daryl Wood's favorite song. They actually played here at the Jefferson last week for Carbon Leaf. But Dee joins us now on Off to the Races. Dean Lineweaver, a staple of the racing meet at Shenandoah Downs. And Dee, good morning. Thanks for spending some time with us this morning.
Good morning.
We tried to get the House That Built Me by Miranda Lambert on board, but you know, sometimes as these things move around quickly, couldn't get that lined up just in time, but have to listen to Daryl Wood's Carbon Leaf. No slight there, huh?
No, that's fine.
That's fine. Great. Big opening day coming up here next week. Live horse racing comes back to Virginia in the form of the harness meet up at Central of Woodstock there in Shenandoah County. And just a sort of a relic of a racetrack. A lot of people are rapidly becoming familiar with it because of the live racing and the signal development that has developed out of this meet. But you've been familiar with it for a long time. I mean, how are things coming together for the meet up at Shenandoah?
Well, they're coming along really well. We've done some maintenance to the track here in the last couple weeks when the weather broke, and we're excited for opening day.
I call it Shenatoga because it's just has that big track, small town feel to it, just like Shenandoah, just like Saratoga does. And harness racing, it's just a great symbiotic relationship between the town and the track. They both feed off each other, I should say. Tell us about sort of the dynamics of the meet. And this is the first spring meet to be held there, so you must be excited about the interest, not having to go up against football and fall weather and everything. It really is a pretty opportune time to hold harness racing.
I agree with you. I've when they first mentioned it, I was really excited. It brings a different level, different kinds of horses, different horsemen that are looking to race in a different place in the spring versus, where they were traveling around at in the fall and kind of stopping by Shenandoah. So I'm really excited for the young horses that are, that have been off all winter that are coming back. And, what we're going to see here in terms of those young horses, breaking out for the year and what they're going to become and where they're going to go for the rest of the season.
Yeah, then just great atmosphere up there. We're getting familiar with it. We're starting to know it as racing fans and across the state. But your family and the lineage that you have, the line weave back through your family generations, goes pretty deep. Tell us about not only your experience with racing at Shenandoah Downs, but also the generations that go back in your family. This is a landmark for your family.
It is. It goes really deep. My father and his family, they're originally from Shenandoah County here. Way back in the 1700s, his family actually landed here. So they've been here their whole, you know, the whole time. And then he married my mother. She's actually from Delaware. But both sides of my family, my mom and my dad, both raced horses for a living. And then their parents raced horses for a living. My dad started driving when he was around 12, and he never did anything else. My mother's mother was actually an assistant race secretary at Ocean Downs and also worked in the office at Harrington in Delaware. So I've got office work and, you know, lab racing training on both sides of my family. So I have a sister. She's full-time harness races. That's all she does for a living. And I raced horses for a long time until I got this opportunity at Colonial Downs, actually. I was asked to work in the office there, and I did so as the assistant racing secretary for right around 6 years before we before that partnership dissolved and we moved to Woodstock here at Shenandoah Downs. And then I got promoted to the director. So we've been here now. This will be our 8th year here. We did have 1 year in between at a little place in Charlottesville called Oak Ridge. And the 4th generation is up and running of the Line Weaver family and harness racing. My children, I have one that works on the track crew here. He's just turned 18, and he's going away to Diesel College in the fall. But he works on our track crew. And then my daughter is hands-on with grooming and caring for the horses here when we race. And so we do definitely have a long history here.
Yeah, and it's just such a quaint atmosphere, great atmosphere. Don't need binoculars, free parking, free attendance. You can watch the racing from the grandstand, which is a bit of a relic, very scenic atmosphere. So really looking forward to catching up with the meet here that starts next Saturday, April 1st. Dee, thanks for spending some time with us on Off to the Races, and good luck with the start of the meet next week.
You're welcome, and thank you so much.
Dee Lineweaver joining us, leading off to the races this morning. I was really surprised, kind of switching gears here. We popped on the Blood Horse website late week, and the headline on the website was that one of our favorite horses is coming back to racing. This career didn't pan out for just yet, kind of moving from plan A to plan B to plan C. Plan A was Kentucky, plan B was Japan. Plan C was to bring this horse back to the turf, and that horse is Rombauer, who won the 2021 edition of the Preakness Stakes. This is what it sounded like. One of the great wins and great calls from Larry Kalmus there. Rombauer, the Preakness winner, not going to stud, going to try the turf. We're certainly hoping that he ends up at Colonial Downs. So anyway, that's some news from the Blood Horse there. Reaching out for our feature guest on the show, Ken McPeak, and should have him here in just a few moments. Ken McPeak has two horses running today in the Louisiana Derby, and those horses had a little bit of a long shot here. Sun Thunder 5-1 and In the Mischief horse with Brian Hernandez aboard, and then he also has Dennington a little bit longer shot, 12-1. He joins us now on Off to the Races. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Hey, thanks for spending some time with us on Off to the Races this morning on such a busy day for you. You have racing all over the country, it seems like. Horses running at the fairgrounds and, of course, at Turfway Park as well. Coming up, you have Escapologist running at Turfway Park, a 30-1 long shot in the field. But let's start maybe with the Louisiana Derby here, a field of 12 going to the gate. Looks like weather's going to be good. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts with Sun. Let's start off with Sun Thunder, who's coming in after a second place finish in the Risen Star Stakes, going to go an extra half of a furlong here in this Louisiana Derby, just a prime race. How's he coming into the race?
Well, I really liked his run down here in his last start in the Risen Star, and I think it sets him up really well for a big run in the Louisiana Derby. I mean, the added 16th of a mile is going to benefit him, I believe, and he showed on the gallop out that he was maybe the best horse that day, but it's going to be fun. Dennington's been his workmate for the last several weeks. This is a horse that we're confident with as well, and I think between the two of them, fingers crossed, maybe we'll get lucky and get the big check.
Instant Coffee is going to be on the inside of Sun Thunder in this group, so that's the favorite in the field. This is a race that you've won before, but it's been a little bit of a while. Repent gave you a winner in this race back in 2002. It's been so long that it's actually hard to find audio and video of that edition. You know, what were your thoughts of winning with Repent way back when? And tell us a little bit about Repent. Was second in the Travers. I mean, this was a horse that really ran well for you.
Yeah, he was a top horse. Won the Kentucky Jockey Club as a 2 year old, and but he won the Risen Star by 5, and then came back and barely won the Louisiana Derby in somewhat of a paceless race. Jerry Bailey rode him. So I don't know if that makes me old or experienced, but, you know, maybe a little of both. But, yeah, we've run well in the Louisiana Derby in the past. But, yeah, that's the only winner up to date, and proud of it.
In the Jeff Ruby Stakes, a Grade 3 run at Turfway Park, 30-1 is the line that was given to Escapologist. This is a horse coming off the turf where he performed very well. So Turfway Park might be a good opportunity for him there. You know, tell us about your thoughts with the Jeff Ruby Stakes later today, another Kentucky Derby prep.
Well, we've got zero expectations with Escapologist other than the fact that he's been doing really well, and I wanted to try him in a mile and an eighth, and I thought that the Jeff Ruby was a spot that the distance would suit him, and we're hopeful that he'll handle the synthetic. Most horses that run well on the turf do, but he seems to be going the right direction, and we're hoping for a setup, and he could come running late. You know, there's some speed in there, and how this race unfolds will be interesting, but I have no doubt that he'll handle the added distance, and I think he'll handle the synthetic. Of course, you never know till you try him.
Yeah, switching there from the turf to synthetic is a lot easier than going from the dirt to the synthetic there. So, yeah, good luck there with Escapologist in the Ruby. We're not going to go back as far as Repent when we talk about one of your more recent races. We're just going back to last week, and that was with the Private Term Stakes at Laurel Park. This was a field of 8, and we actually held the race call that we usually run earlier in the show for this interview, but let's have Dave Rodman bring him home in the Private Terms run last week at Laurel Park.
We're at the top of the stretch. Coffee with Chris. Coffee with Chris and Haystrike on the outside of the attack. Register is in third, circling the drain. Begins to move up in between horses. And how great is Nate? Tiring just a bit. 3/16 left to go. And on the outside, Haystrike strikes the front. Coffee with Chris willing to give that one a battle. Just a neck behind with an eighth of a mile left to go. It's Haystrike. Coffee with Chris. Haystrike out kicking Coffee with Chris. Haystrike. Haystrike in the Private Term Stakes to win. A win by 2 from Coffee with Chris.
It wasn't quite the shock as Rich Strike in the Kentucky Derby, but $18.20 to win for Haystrike there with a performance and nice ride by Horacio Caramanis. He was on the rail, and when I say he was on the rail, I'm talking about the outside rail. He was pretty wide there in the racetrack. You must have been thrilled with the performance of Haystrike at Laurel Park last week.
Well, he's a horse that you want to keep in the clear, and so he doesn't lose any ground. He's a half-brother to the horse that's run up east a lot named Senior Investment, a colt that I won the Lexington Stakes with. And, you know, Hayes Strike needed to find I needed a dirt race for him to bring him up to his next start. And we're going to give him a shot in the bluegrass off that win. He's run well in Kentucky. He's kind of knocked on the door in some of the two-year-old stakes last fall behind some recognizable now three-year-olds, but I think he's going the right way, and I think distance is a non-issue, and I'm excited about his chances, especially at a little added distance in the bluegrass.
Yeah. You're thinking he might what is he? So he may run in the bluegrass? Is that where he may run next? Did I hear that?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
he's
great.
3-year-old colt, and he's nominated to the bluegrass in Lexington. I'll probably run two horses there, Mendelssohn's March and him. But I think this is a colt that he's improving. He's strictly dirt. You don't want to run him on the synthetic. I did that once, and he didn't handle that at all. Although I think that there was a little more to his poor performance at Turfway. But on the dirt, he's run well. He's been solid, and he always runs respectable, and I think that he needs to find another notch forward, but I think it's possible.
Yeah, but Tappet Trice, horse just won the Tampa Bay Derby, will be there as well. So, that'll be a great duel there. So, great. That's good to hear. Good luck with the bluegrass there. Want to take you back maybe a little bit further now with a race run here in Virginia. This is a race that was 10 years ago. It's hard to believe. It's a race that sort of gets lost a little bit because it was the last year Colonial Downs was running before they went dormant for about 6 years. And that was the 2013 Virginia Derby with War Dancer. War Dancer was your horse. You had kind of been close. You entered a lot of horses in the Virginia Derby, like Prince Arch and Nestle's Crunch and horses like that, but you finally got the win with War Dancer. Tell us about that experience.
Well, he was a beautiful horse. War Dancer was a first crop of Warfront, and I bought him at Saratoga and put a group together to race him, but that was a really interesting three-horse photo that he got his nose down in, and that horse ended up making over $1 million and stands stud in New York. I think he's had some modest success as a stallion, but he's well taken care of up there. And has Virginia. I think I've won the Derby and the Oaks in Virginia. I think I'd like to get that done in Kentucky one day, too, so we'll see.
Yeah, what do you make of the Kentucky Derby field this year? I mean, you have your interest, of course, but I mean, it's other than Forte, I mean, it's pretty wide open. It's kind of like the NCAA tournament right now. There's a lot of opportunity. What do you make of the field?
Well, I definitely think Forte is a likely favorite, but I think the horses that are running in the Midwest right now between Louisiana and Arkansas are really solid. And these are large fields, and they make you work hard to win these. And the depth, I think, in the Midwest right now, I think, is there. But, of course, you got to line them up, and you know, a lot's got to go right to win it. And, of course, we know from last year a lot can happen. So it's another wide-open derby.
Yeah, in the Triple Crown, you had Toronto Run back in 1995, finished second in the Derby. You won the Belmont Stakes with Saraba that same year. Repent was winning in 2002. But the one call and the one race that still just enthuses me is that 2020 Preakness with Swiss Skydiver. Let's hear the call of that race.
With a quarter to go at Pimlico, and the filly shows away. Swiss Skydiver, Authentic, the Derby winner, alongside. They're set for a battle in Baltimore. And on the inside, Swiss Skydiver. On the outside, Authentic. Johnny B going left-handed. Swiss Skydiver. Swiss Skydiver for a long left to go. Swiss Skydiver looking to make Preakness history. Another filly bounding toward the 16th pole. And here's Authentic on the outside, answering the call head and head and nose and nose. Swiss Skydiver and Robbie Alvarado, they've done it from Authentic.
Yeah, just Dave Rodman with a call there. These two horses hooked up basically on the backstretch, and Swiss Skydiver, just the stubbornest nose in horse racing that year, holding off Authentic. That, of course, was a Preakness that was run in the fall due to COVID. But going back to Swiss Skydiver, you can win Triple Crown races, obviously, and you won it with the filly there. That, I mean, just tell us a little bit, give us some insight on that race and what it means to you now.
Well, it never gets old listening to it. You know, she was so special. You know, we had a really fun week with her up there too. And you know, she was just happy there in Baltimore. And Robbie came and got on her, and we were in a kind of an odd spot in that I thought I had Tyler Gaffleone to ride the horse day of the entries or day before the entries, and all of a sudden I didn't. And Robbie filled in perfectly, but it's a you know, one of those magical trips. It's a very difficult thing to do, and she was just really good that day, and she was a real honor to be around.
Yeah, just an exceptional filly, and yeah, they just, if you want to look at a great horse race, a great stretch run, pull that up on your computer, and it's just one that you, how she got her nose, I guess, back in front. It looked like Authentic might have hit it, or maybe not, but it looked like she was going to relent, and she did not, and just stubborn on the inside there. Mm-hmm. Well, Ken, good luck today. Go ahead with your comment.
No, thanks for having me. You know, it's a exciting time of year, and we're all enthused, and hopefully we'll get lucky and pull off some big ones here.
Yeah, certainly with Sun Thunder and Dennington today, and the Louisiana Derby, and then with Escapologist later today as well in the Jeff Ruby Stakes. Thanks for spending some time with us this morning, and good luck.
All right, everybody, have a great day. See you at the races.
Ken McPeak joining us on Off to the Races this morning. We're headed to break here on Off to the Races, our first and only break of the show. When we come back, Frank Vespi will take the reins, and he'll speak with Jennifer Kelly. And, of course, we got Derby Bill here in a little bit as well. Thanks for spending your Saturday morning with us on Off to the Races. We'll talk to you after the break.
This time I'm walking to New Orleans. I'm walking to New Orleans. I'm gonna need to parachute when I get through walking these blues. When I get back to New Orleans, I've got my suitcase in my hand.
Meantime, Florida Atlantic, well aware that Noel is their number one item on their scouting report, notes ESPN's Seth Greenberg.
Yeah, they got to make him a scorer. And look, Florida Atlantic, they got four guards that they play in one post. They're going to switch everything on the perimeter. So that will keep him in front of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, welcome back, everybody. Frank Vespi here on Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz. Interesting stuff from Kenny McPeak prior to the break there with Nick Hahn, and Nick will be coming back in a little bit, bringing in Derby Bill, all kind of stuff still to go here on Off to the Races. Right now, I'm going to bring in Jennifer Kelly. Jennifer is an author. She writes a monthly column focusing on great horses of the past. You can read Backtracks on theracingbiz.com every month. This month, it's Missy's Mirage, a New Jersey bred who became one of Hall of Fame trainer Alan Jerkin's favorite horses. Jennifer, also the author of two books, Sir Barton and the Making of the Triple Crown, which came out in 2019, and the forthcoming Foxes of Bel-Air, which is about Gallant Fox and Omaha, still the only father-son duo of Triple Crown winners. Jennifer, welcome to the program. You grew up in Alabama. How'd you find your way into racing?
That is a great question, and it's one I get often, and I'm honestly puzzled myself. I had the great benefit of having a teacher who read the Black Stallion series to me in our fifth grade class, and then that happened to be right about the time that the Birmingham Turf Club, which would later come to be known as the Birmingham Racecourse, opened. So I had an aunt, my Aunt Betty, who took pity on me and took me to the races, and I was pretty much done after that.
So you were a goner once you got to the race.
Yeah, track, huh? And this was about the time that Winning Colors and Sunday Silence were, you know, part of the Triple Crown runs in 88 and 89. And I mean, I just couldn't resist. It was love for the rest of my life.
Now let's try that again. Let me ask you this. So starting on the Sir Barton book, you know, it's entitled Sir Barton and the Making of the Triple Crown. And what is it, what was it, you know, the Triple Crown wasn't at that moment perceived as the Triple Crown. What was it about sort of Sir Barton that made people start to, you know, think of this as sort of a cohesive sequence?
Well, it turned out to be forces that he put in motion, but grew beyond him. I mean, basically what he did was he showed people that it was doable to go and win this rich race in Louisville and then to go to, you know, Pimlico and win that rich race. And then the whole winning the Belmont was sort of a fluky thing that happened because he had gotten a cold. And rather than shipping him back to Kentucky for the Latonia Derby, they kept him in New York, where the stable was currently, you know, going through the spring meet, and just saved him for the Belmont Stakes. And so what that did is it showed people that these three races were doable, that they were very much, you know, worth the money and worth the try. And then over the course of that decade in between, between Sir Barton and Gallant Fox, as the three races started basically competing with each other for the same horses, they kept bumping their purses up and bumping their purses up. And more people decided that this triumvirate of horses was worth the value, you know, worth the money and worth the risk of going and starting and trying. And so that's sort of how he touched off all that. But, you know, at the moment, people are just like, oh, he won these three, you know, great three-year-old races, and, hey, we should try to duplicate that.
Were you surprised when you started looking into first Sir Barton and then Gallant Fox and Omaha? These seem like, you know, sort of natural topics for books. Were you surprised that there was kind of a wide open field?
That books had not been done?
Yes.
Yeah, I was surprised, especially when I started doing Sir Barton, because, you know, at that moment I was not working as a writer. I was working as an instructor in teaching writing to, you know, university students, and thinking, well, gosh, surely someone's done this already. And then as I started digging deeper, I think what people assumed was that the, you know, myriad of books out there on the Triple Crown kind of had told the whole story, and that was good enough, and there really wasn't as much depth to the story as one might assume, and so they just hadn't really tackled it. I mean, Sir Barton lost a match race to Man O' War, so I could see where people were kind of like, eh. He'd sort of gotten this reputation of being, you know, kind of a fluke, in a way, and not the horse that he was in his time. And then Gallant Fox and Omaha, I think people were just thought that the story really wasn't, you know, as in-depth or as rich as it turned out to be, just because, you know, they were both owned by the same man, but trained by the same man, and, you know, ran in the 30s, and look what came since then. You know, look what came after. So it was a fun endeavor to really dig deep into those, especially with Sir Barton, because I think everyone just assumed that he went from Preakness to Belmont, and that was a natural course of things. And when I discovered why he ended up in the Belmont, it just blew me away, because I had never seen any inkling that that was the reason why he ended up there.
Talking with Jennifer Kelly, author of the forthcoming Foxes of Bel-Air about Gallant Fox and Omaha, the only father-son duo of Triple Crown winners. And they were bred and owned by William Woodward's Bel-Air stud in Bowie, Maryland. What's Bel-Air's place in racing history, Jennifer?
I would characterize Bel-Air as being a precursor to Calumet. Calumet, you know, started their domination of racing in the 40s, and then it continued into the 50s and the 60s. And William Woodward was a progenitor of that. The 30s were his decade. He won the Triple Crown with Gallant Fox. He won the Triple Crown with Omaha. He won, you know, with Granville, and he won the Derby with Johnstown. And, like, that decade was where the vast majority of his classic races, his big money and big prizes were won. He won the Ascot Gold Cup during that decade with Slayers. He came close to winning the Ascot Gold Cup with Omaha. He, almost had English Triple Crown contenders in Boswell and other horses during that decade. So really, William Woodward was the precursor to Calumet in the 30s. And then, of course, as in all things racing, it's hard to sustain that sort of success over time. So the following decade, you know, he still had good horses, but he didn't have nearly the same level of success that he had in the 30s.
When you went to Bel-Air, I'm curious as to what, you know, how that experience, how actually sort of being in the place, how did that sort of inform your book and your work on this book?
Well, the unfortunate thing is I didn't actually get to go to Bel-Air until the book was mostly finished. And so it was nice, though, to be able to go to the space in Bowie and see the stable and see the house, and to think about, you know, this is where all these decisions were made. This is where these horses were. You know, if you've not been to the area, once William Woodward Jr. was passed away in 1955, the land was mostly sold off to a developer, and so now around the stable and the museum are a neighborhood and a school in a very much a residential area. And it was nice, though, to stand there and kind of picture how wide open everything was, how, you know, beautiful, big paddocks, and, you know, they raised Clydesdales and sheep and other farm animals. And I just enjoyed communing in this space with them and sort of feeling like what it must have been like during that time. And other people that I've talked to since then, like Cheryl Lancaster and a couple others who lived in the area, grew up in the area, remember, you know, going to Bel-Air. They remember the people. They remember how, you know, lovely and expansive it was and all the horses that were there. And so it's nice, because with Sir Barton, I've been to Audley, but I haven't been out to Wyoming where he's buried. And so I haven't really had the same physical connection. It's just nice to stand there in the space and think, this is where these things happened. You know, this is the ground that so many of our traditions that we, you know, go through each year kind of took root. So I loved it, and it did help when it came to picturing certain parts of what I was talking about in the book, especially with the chapter on William Woodward.
What's going to, as people pick up this book is coming out in May. You can pre-order it right now, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But what's going to surprise people when they read this book?
Oh, you know, it's, to me, it was just how big they were at that time, like how famous they were. Because to us, we assume, you know, that this is well known to us. They're Triple Crown winners. They're up there in this pantheon with, you know, all these assaults and Citation and Secretariat. And this is Secretariat's 50th anniversary this year. But, like, racing was so different at the time. The starting gate was just becoming a fixture on a racetrack, and it was still in its very earliest iterations. And, like, you know, the Triple Crown itself was starting to coalesce as a thing, but was kind of tentatively still, you know, a focus. And so it was, great to see the fits and starts for a horse like Gallant Fox, who really needed to be molded into shape. And then Omaha, who was really probably would have been better suited to run in England than the United States. But if people are not aware that we had a Triple Crown winner that actually crossed the Atlantic Ocean and spent an entire season in England, this is going to be a revelation to them, because he went to England and immediately adapted to running a different surface in a different direction and won his first race out of the gate. And so I think that's going to be something that people are going to really enjoy, is just getting to the depths of what was going on, who were the big names, and what this moment was like, because it really was a transitional moment to me in racing, because it was where we shifted from that early 20th century into what is more familiar to modern fans.
All right, Jennifer Kelly, thanks for joining us here on Off to the Races. I understand you got a deal available for people if they want to get their hands on this book.
Yeah, so Gallant Fox's birthday was Thursday, the 23rd, and Omaha's was yesterday, the 24th. So we're going to run a promotion through Sunday where readers can pre-order the book with the code FBELAIR, F-B-E-L-A-I-R, and they can get 20% off a pre-order through the University Press of Kentucky. And you can find links on my social media on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And one lucky person pre-orders the book this weekend will be entered to win a prize, or will win a prize that includes pins, like the little tack pins with the silks from Omaha and Gallant Fox, and then a couple of Christmas ornaments and a neat little model of Belair Stable Stud, or Belair Stud Stable. So I'm excited. Pick up the book.
I think it's a great idea for people to pick up the book, but you could probably help them by telling people what your social media
coming next. So the easiest one is at Foxes of Bel Air. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Foxes of Bel Air, which is named for the book. And then my other one, that I've had for the longest time, is at the Sir Barton, because Sir Barton was taken when I went on Twitter. So at the Sir Barton. And then on Facebook, you can find me under the book. You can search for The Foxes of Bel Air, and the book has a page. And also for my author page is Jennifer S. Kelly. And, just come find me. I'm also on TikTok, but please just don't, critique my, video skills, because I'm, still getting used to that. So...
All right, so it's at Foxes of Bel Air. You can find her on Twitter. You can find her on Instagram. There's all sorts of other stuff. But remember, at Foxes of Bel Air, that's going to be the easiest way to find Jennifer.
Yes.
Special deal offered on Foxes of Bel Air, forthcoming book about Omaha and Gallant Fox, coming out in May. Jennifer Kelly, thanks so much for joining us here on Off to the Races.
Thanks for everything, Frank. I appreciate it.
All right, Nick, we'll kick it back to you. That was Jennifer Kelly, author of the forthcoming Foxes of Bel Air.
Yeah, just a kind of a wonderful thing that I did a few years ago. I started reading all these biographies. So I've read the one on Ruffian. Of course, the one on Secretariat. Seabiscuit was the one that kind of got me started down this path. I'm almost sure I have that Sir Barton book here somewhere. I'm still trying to find it as we're on the air, but looking forward to hearing about Omaha as well. So just a great, and the Backtrack series that she does on the racingbiz.com, that's been interesting reads all the way through, Frank.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's been fun kind of meeting a lot of these horses that I either wasn't familiar with or sort of was vaguely familiar with, but really didn't know anything about. So it's been fun to read those. And that's a monthly column Jennifer does for us on theracingbiz.com. And again, you can pick up her book. You can find her on the socials at Foxes of Bel Air.
Great job, Frank. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Nick.
A little bit of a program note about next week, by the way. They have the Secretariat celebration happening in Alfred, in Ashland, as part of the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's romp through the Triple Crown. We will be there in Ashland. We're not sure exactly where in Ashland, but we'll try and get that out. Come on out and see us, as well as some of the other events that will be there, the movie that will air early in the morning, and Ragged Mountain Distillery has from a special mash that came from the meadow, the mash from the meadow, if you will be there as well, and you can learn about how they distilled their special edition of Ragged Mountain that will be available here shortly. And ABC stores, I think it's April 22nd, and there's actually a way you can be in a lottery to get some signed bottles from Ronnie Turcotte himself, just a great ambassador to racing. We've had Ron Turcotte on the show several times, Secretariat's jockey, of course, and he's just he's still doing well and living up there on the main Canadian border up there. So just some notes for next week for Off to the Races, and that special edition of Ragged Mountain's bourbon, which is actually distilled here a little bit west of Charlottesville. They'll be up there as well as part of that. Woodford does their special edition, and it's great to see Ragged Mountain hopping in as well. Which we've come to the point in the show where we find out and catch up with Derby Bill Watson. Let's see what the preference is on his bumper music this week. This is the Isley Brothers. Who's that lady? And sometimes I know where Derby Bill is headed. I do know the Isley Brothers were from Cincinnati, where they just a little bit across the river there. They'll be running the Jeff Ruby Stakes over in northern Kentucky. But Derby Bill, who joins us now on Off to the Races, why, who's that lady this week?
Tribute to Turfway Park and the Cincinnati Ites that make the trek across the bridge 9 miles from Cincinnati. This is the beautiful Turfway Park, renovated with sports book and everything now. And the Bourbonette Oaks is being held there before the Jack Ruby. And it's a Oaks also prep race for the Kentucky Oaks going on at the Turfway and Fairgrounds today with the, so a tribute to the Phillies horses today. There's actually even a Sunland Park Oaks Sunday before the Sunland Park Derby. So there's three prep races for the Kentucky Derby and then three for the, Kentucky Oaks. So a monster day here, and it's already started overseas. We had a Laurel Brace-based trainer, Jerry O'Dreyer, Irish Jerry O'Brien, won a race in Dubai already on Sibelius over Switzerland. You remember Switzerland, 9-year-old horse, American horse, gave it all it could, but big win by Sibelius at like 8-1, Nick, in Dubai. More importantly, the UAA Derby
now,
was held.
Now,
let me
hold you. Yeah. Let me check you here, Derby Bill, because I actually have this for you, I believe.
All right.
Let's have Larry Colmus give us the call for the UAE Derby. We'll talk on the other side.
As Japan leads the way to the top of the stretch, Derma Sotagaki under a hand ride here. Coming down to the eight pole in control, Dura Arende is second. Then comes Continuar in third, but it is Derma Sotagaki and a confident Christophe Lemaire pouring it on late. Derma Sotagaki, an impressive winner of the UAE Derby, winning it easily here by 5 or 6 lengths under the wire.
0-18 are the UAE Derby winners in the Kentucky Derby. Derma Sotogaki is going to be trying to break that, go 1-for-19 with the UAA Derby. I only got a chance to see the stretch run of the race shortly before we came on the air. It was about 9:55 when they ran that race. You've had a little bit more time to digest that race, and I just can't wait to hear you try and pronounce the winner's name here. What are your thoughts on the UAE Derby?
Sure Magata.
Not even close.
Sure Magata means I had him to win. So I believe we went 10-1 down to 6-1. He's shipped over from America. He's a son of Mind the Biscuits, and you remember Mind the Biscuits is New York bred that won $4 million career-wise. I think I have to check with Mike Barone, but the all-time leading earnings winner in New York bred Mind the Biscuits. So I'm pretty hungry, Nick. Got a nice winner there with Derma Sakichaki.
You had that horse. Good for you. Congratulations. Picking up that winner there, because that was a hard horse to find there. It's hard to pick out that winner in that group. Cairo was in that group, didn't do very well. A horse that was bred by Quality Road. So and I had Tallboy in that race, and Tallboy was there a little bit. Bob Baffert's horse didn't do well at all either. Worcestershire.
Well, you'll need a Tallboy
on board. Yeah,
you will need a Tallboy after that race because it came out Japan. Japan came in first, Nick, second, third, and fourth. Japan won the World Baseball Classic this week and won the Superfecta in the UAA Derby. And the owner, I watched it live on FS2. It's on now. But the owner said he is heading to Kentucky, and he's going to mix a Kentucky mint julep with sushi.
Okay. That makes for a long Saturday night and early Saturday morning, but yeah. We'll go with that. Hey, want to get your thoughts. Last week, we our feature race were the private term stakes, and how about Ken McPeak? I didn't catch that, but I guess it's been widely reported Horacio Caramanos getting the winner there for him. Hey, Strike, going to point toward the Bluegrass and maybe take a run at the Kentucky Derby. What are your thoughts of private terms getting into the Derby? Of course, always an interest in the Preakness of being based there in Maryland, but what were your thoughts on the private terms from last week with Hayes Strike?
Idiotic thoughts not taking Special K in a big race that I had no absolute favorite in that race. That was a great betting race, and Special K has been good to us in the past with these long shots, and I hope he gets to run ship down to Keeneland and run in that race. That would be unique career type bill, pat on the back to Horacio Caramanos if he gets to ride in Keeneland on that horse. But just a brilliant the way he rides, just patient, and then make a run. That's his forte, and works on dirt for him. Works a little better on turf at Colonial for him, Colonial Downs, but it does work on dirt. He's, 2,500 wins that we know of before he left overseas. Just a great run.
Yeah, no, I wanted to ask Ken about that, but I didn't want to jinx it too early. But yeah, we'd love to see Caramanos in the Bluegrass and then eventually in the Derby. That would be a thrill for not only us, but obviously for Caramanos. Our feature race of the week this week is the Louisiana Derby. You've seen the field here. Great job, by the way, the fairgrounds putting out these PPs on Saturday. So we've been looking at them all week. I'd like to see more of that in racing because you get more handicapping time. Who's your pick in the Louisiana Derby?
I'm going with Tappet's Conquest. I'm looking for value, and I don't like coffee. So I don't drink coffee. I drink tea. And I'm more of a Brit deep down. So Instant Coffee gets busted because of the name and no value at 2-1. So going for Tappet Conquest, 10-1. Just a nice price horse. And he's good enough to beat this group. Curly Jackson there and Jace's Road. I'm just going for a 10-1 shocker at Fairgrounds. Obviously, we didn't get the shockers last week, but we were happy with Last Samurai. And, you know, from Colonial to a big win there, Samurai's heading towards $2 million last week's win. So I'm going to try Tappet's Conquest. Who do you like?
I'm going to go with Sun Thunder. I am going to go with McPeak's horse here, hoping he rebounds out of the Risen Star. Don't have a strong feeling on it. I'm going to try and beat the favorite in Instant Coffee here. I kind of like Disarming King's Barnes as well, who will be right beside him in the starting gate for Asmussen, that Gunrunner. And then Pletcher, I think's horse is dangerous as well. Two wins coming into this race. Doesn't have the class, but... And the distance could be a factor. So, but I'm going to go with Sun Thunder here as we pick those races. How about the Jeff Ruby Stakes? We got about 90 seconds, maybe less.
Yeah, obviously I'd soon drink the thing, but 700K is the key there. They boosted it up to 700K and 100 Derby points. So the people at Colonial will get a Derby prep by 2024, so hopefully it'll be 700K. Wadsworth, 8-1, appears to be a big player in this race. Number 11, Wadsworth, over in Major okay. Dude. So,
Yeah, great. Wadsworth, your pick there. That's all the time we got on this edition of Off to the Races. Want to thank everybody that was involved in the show. We had D. Lineweaver. We had Ken McPeak, Jennifer Kelly, Frank Vespi, Derby Bill, of course. We'll talk to you next week from Ashland, post time, 10 o'clock. Come by and see us.
You're listening to The Fine Line with Joe Wiz and Sean.